Welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where information is exchanged with the expectation that it is to be applied. I am your host, Hunter Drew, founder of thefamilyalpha.com, as well as co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Now let's dive into a discussion that can help you help yourself. Again, this is the Family Alpha Podcast. Now let's get to work. Welcome to another episode of the Family Alpha Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Scott Barker. We're going to be talking all things mountain climbing, jiu-jitsu, and how you go from being in the stands to a man who's in the arena. With that, Scott, first-time guest to the Family Alpha Podcast. How are you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm on the morning brew with Hunter Drew, man. I couldn't get any better.
That's excellent. That's the best response I've ever gotten to that question. Scott, for those who are listening, who is Scott Barker? You know, first time guest, people want to know, who am I talking to?
So I'm just a regular guy. I live in the Central Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, with my wife on our little 5-acre compound out here with our horses and a couple of cats. My day job, I'm a program manager for a military manufacturer, travel all over the nation, basically putting out fires and making sure my customers are happy. And in my spare time, I'm a jiu-jitsu white belt, stay on the mats and get healthy and try to be a better man.
You know what's really cool? Since you included the white belt, the next time we talk, I'm going to keep asking what belt you are. So I'm going to be able to track your progression through the sport as you go through.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got a bunch of guys at my gym right now getting ready to test for their blue belts. I'm one of their training partners. The official term is Uki, which basically means opponent. I personally think that translates into choking dummy, cause that's basically what happens. So yeah, we've got a bunch of my team members who are getting ready to test in early March, and I'll probably be testing in September.
Roger. It's amazing. We were talking earlier before we kicked off the recording about how a lot of people I know, like you, Nick Lowry, a few of the other guys out on Twitter, you voluntarily get your asses choked out. You know, it's like, what do you do for fun? I fight guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting hobby, and it attracts a bunch of interesting people. We're definitely a special breed, and you can say that, I think, about anybody who goes into combat sports of any kind, be it boxing, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, for fun. They're even more interesting if they do it for a living. But if you've got a 9-to-5 or an 8-to-6 or whatever your work schedule is, and in your spare time, you find time to come in and get beat up for fun, that's a special type of person.
I can imagine the tribe you guys are building. It's fantastic. Now, you said something in your intro. You said, you know, you're just a regular guy. And that's one of the reasons, actually, I wanted to talk to you. And I'm really glad we were able to link up and get on the show, is because our mutual friend, Steel Jans, Nate from Barbaric Soap, he sort of introduced us. He's like, hey, check this article out, the one you had written on jiu-jitsu, which we'll get into a little bit later. But as I started going through your timeline, there's something about you that really resonated with me. And it's that there's nothing super extravagant. You know, some people, they're the millionaire that live in Fiji, and, you know, they're in a different hotel each day. Or there's the guy who's driving the $3.5 million car. Or the guy who, you know, just has these 15 world records. You know, these really huge resume of life. And then there's people like us who's like, we're just doing our normal thing. You know, what you would call the normal life. You know, we got the family, the house, we're doing our thing, you know, the land, and we're having a good time together. And yet we're still able to, we're on par with all these other guys. And they have these extravagant stories, but what we share are these just normal day-to-day stories. These stories of just a majority of people can really relate to. You know, so I wanted to know, how did you get to the point to where you started using Twitter as a means to improving your life, as opposed to trying to live through others on Twitter that you see so often with so many men?
So I got started on Twitter, I think about 4 years ago. And I really, the only reason I started a Twitter account was to follow Jocko Willink. That was the only reason I started a Twitter account.
Is that because of the jiu-jitsu?
No, the jiu-jitsu came later.
Oh, all right.
I actually found Jocko's podcast, and I found that through, I don't know if you've seen the his YouTube video for his little clip called Good.
Yes.
Okay, that was my first exposure to Jocko. I was like, man, this guy's, you know, he's wired for sound. He's putting down the kind of energy that, you know, that I want to resonate with. And honestly, that whole theory of good, right? Something bad happens, good. You're going to learn from it. You're going to move on. I was in the middle of a really bad project at work that just was starting to drag me down. And man, that message hit exactly when I needed it. So got on Twitter, started following Jocko and, you know, started listening to his podcast. And then I just started finding these people that were of like mind, right? People who were real people that I could connect with. And they were self-improvement guys. They were, you know, guys from the Red Pill like yourself and you know, Brother Craig James and, you know, following these people. And I started to see, oh, there are ways that I can use this, you know, this application, this glimpse into other people's lives to try to improve my own. Cause like you said, I consider myself a normal guy. You know, I live out in the country with my wife on, you know, 5 acres of a property with our horses and some cats. So, you know, but we can always try to be better. So the more I explored Twitter, the more real people I found. And you know, some people use it, like you said, to live vicariously through other people. But there are so many good, genuine people on Twitter that if you're genuine, right, and you don't try to project a life that you don't really live, you can attract those same genuine people and they can add to your digital tribe. Can Twitter be a dumpster fire? Yeah, sure. But only if you light the match, right? I mean, you're in total control of who you follow and who you block. So, you know, your Twitter profile is kind of a reflection of how you live your life.
That very well said, man. That is, I might actually clip that out and make it a highlight of this already. And we just started. That is such a sound advice. You know, you decide how your experience on social media is. That's, I wish more people understood that. And again, that's one of the things that draws me to people is you can rather quickly see whether somebody's blowing smoke or if they're legitimate. You know, you can only maintain a facade for so long. So when you scroll through a timeline and just day after day, it's the same story. They're sticking to their message. They're improving in various areas of their life. You're like, yeah, I can root for that. You know, and something I've noticed, I actually shared it today, was they have this weird, you know, they're idolizing social media accounts. And it's like, don't put yourself down because you're not that person with like a million followers. You know, don't say, well, I'm not doing good enough in life because I don't have this and this. Like, you're not appreciating what you have in life. Sure, if you want to work to make yourself a little more financially independent or you want to make yourself a little, have more adventures in life, please, by all means, go work towards that. But don't start demeaning yourself because the highlight reel you see on Twitter is a reflection that you don't like on your own personal achievements or life. It's just, it's unacceptable to log on, to get angry, to go to your normal life and be more upset with it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, there's enough reasons to be aggravated in real life, let alone what some, you know, egg avatar to Anon account says about you. That, you know, you can turn that off and walk outside and, you know, go for a drive with your wife in the Jeep or whatever it is, and those guys have absolutely no impact on your life. The trick is whether you're using social media to better your life, your real life, or if you're manipulating your real life to try to make your social media life better. And I'm trying to use social media in order to make my real life better.
As we all should be. Now, you mentioned the 5 acres you have. Did you grow up, you know, on a farm, or is that something you wanted to build? That was your piece of paradise?
So I actually live about 10 miles from my original home where I grew up with my folks. I live 5 miles behind the high school that I went to high school with and I met my wife at. We started dating in high school. So we've been married. It'll be 20 years this year and we'll have been together for 28. We dated for 8 years before we got married.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, you know, we live in, like I said, Central Shenandoah Valley, Virginia. So it's an agricultural area, right, surrounded by dairy farms and Christmas tree farms and all kinds of stuff. But my wife rode horses competitively in high school. So when we got married, the horses were living at her parents' place. And then when we got a little farther along in our careers and decided to buy a house, we decided to buy a house that had acreage out in the county and actually move the horses onto our land. So they're her show horses from when she was in college, high school and college. They're retired now. They're basically big pasture pets. But it was, you know, what we wanted to do. We wanted to you know, bring her, you know, one of her first loves back onto our property and you know, live with it day to day. And so that's kind of how we ended up out here in the country.
It's interesting how that plays out. I was speaking to my wife. So we want a homestead right now. We have 1 acre. We need more. We can do some here, but not for what I want to do. But your story on growing up very local to where, or living rather very local to where you grew up, you know, some people are like, oh, you need to go out and do these great, you know, go see the world disappear. And you can't grow up in the same town you were born in. Like, that's ridiculous. Adam Prometheus. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but
I know the Prometheus.
Okay. So Adam Lane Smith, the Prometheus, he has this whole, not theory, but rather, I guess, life plan, I guess that would be a good term for it, where he talks about legacy, and he talks about, look, like, you grow up and you get a bunch of land and your kids can grow up in that land, and if they want to go, they can go, but you keep yourself local, you know, you keep yourself around where you grew up in your roots. And he's like, it's only in recent history that people were taking off from where their parents were and going and living 50 states away. You know, I live in Rhode Island. I grew up in Rhode Island predominantly, and this is where I am now, you know, and this is, I enjoy it here. I like it here. So this is similar to how you're local, you know, Rhode Island is pretty much 10 minutes from everywhere. So it's a very close proximity nature to things. And I think there's something important about that, about where you're coming from, where you were brought up, you know, the history you have there, like that's your home, you know, that's where your wife's horses are. That's where you have planted your roots. And I think there's something to be said about that. With people who they think you can only find purpose or passion in something if you leave what you already have. And I disagree with that.
Yeah, I would disagree with that as well. I haven't, you know, my childhood was actually pretty interesting because my grandfather was a short haul trucker. So he ran milk trucks for a living, but his favorite thing to do was to get in the camper. They had a Winnebago camper and travel all over the country. And for 3 summers, we had 3 opportunities. My mother and I basically packed up with my grandmother, and my grandfather, and we did what we called going out west. And basically we took a month and we started in Virginia and we went down through the Carolinas, across Louisiana into Texas, went through some of the Midwest states, you know, back up through the Dakotas, and then came back down through Ohio back home. So I've basically seen all 48 contiguous except for Connecticut and Washington State. And we did that 3 times as I was growing up. Once when I was in kindergarten, once when I was in the 3rd grade, and once when I was in the 5th grade. And I travel a lot for work. So I have the benefit of having seen just about all of the United States and a couple foreign countries. But I always choose to come back here. Because like you said, this is my home. This is my, you know, these are my roots. I'm definitely a Virginian. I'm definitely a Southerner. Like you said, this is where my roots are. This is where my family is. So I'm always going to come back here.
It's interesting you say that too. So I went to school in Chicago or Illinois. I was stationed in Virginia. I was stationed in North Carolina. And then I lived in Massachusetts for a little bit and then back to Rhode Island. And I've seen all these things, you know, I loved Virginia. I love North Carolina as well. They're great places. But to me, there is something about home, you know, it's weird to describe. Like, we have a lot of rock walls here, you know, because of that's how they marked their territories and whatnot back in the day, like way right back in the day. And to me, I'm like, that there's something so cool about rock walls that I didn't see in certain parts in the South. But also, you know, going overseas, seeing different countries, coming back, I realized that there's a lot in the world, but it's all the same damn thing. You know, you have your busy part, you have your farm part, you have the places you don't want to go, you have the beautiful parts you do go. And I think some people who stay home, or let's say they end up back home, they're like, oh, I'm stuck here. Like, there's beauty where you are. You just got to go see it. It's just like everywhere else. In Virginia, there's a part that's amazing that you love to go, and there's a part that sucks and you don't want to go. Like, downtown Portsmouth, like, don't go there. Like, there's nothing for you there. Don't go to the shipyard for sure, you know? But it's the same thing in every state, in every country. There's just the same thing over and over. So if you're not going to find happiness where you are, leaving it most likely is going to bring you happiness, because that's within. That's not your environment.
Yeah, happiness really is within you. You know, but there's something to be said for getting some travel. And I think that's a similarity, right, with your situation being that you were in the Navy. Were you stationed in Portsmouth or Oceania? Or
Norfolk.
Norfolk? Okay. Or as we call it, Norfolk.
Yeah.
I mean, but you know, you have that perspective, right? Of going out and traveling and seeing the world and then coming back to your home and understanding that, okay, yeah, you know, there's something special here. I think for people who don't necessarily get that perspective, it's a little more challenging because they do feel trapped, right? I mean, I live in the area that I live in. Probably 80% of the people stay here their entire life and probably don't go much farther than like two or three counties away, right? Because family farms, you know, this is where we live. And they don't get that perspective. So there's something that makes you more homely, not homely, but more connected to your roots when you travel, because you get that different perspective.
You know, I like that better. And actually, I want to change my response, because that you just convinced me that that's correct. I think you can't appreciate home until you see the alternative. It's like the Wizard of Oz, you know, Dorothy's like, oh, I want to run away. And then she goes, you know, goes the whole thing. She's like, no, I want to go home. You know, like, home's cool. I'm going to go back there. I think. And also, there is a man inside the Fraternity of Excellence, and I gave him the advice you just said, and I didn't even realize it until you said it. You know, he was like, well, he's in South America currently. But before he went, he's like, well, should I go? You know, is this something I should do? I want to go on an adventure, but I have a comfortable job and I'm content here. I was like, yeah, man. But like, you have this like calling inside, this fire, like you want to go out and like prove yourself, you know, this will be the rite of passage you never had growing up. So he went out on his own by himself to a foreign country. He's doing this crazy trip he's on right now. And we keep checking in to make sure he's still alive, because I'm like, you're in South America, man. Like, what are you doing? But he's doing well. You know what? You can see it. Like, you can feel it. He's now independent. He's now a man. You know, whereas before, he hadn't forged himself, because there was no crucible. There was no rite of passage that said, hey, you're a man now. It's like he grew up, graduated high school, got a degree, got a job. Well, at what point, you know, are you independent? At what point are you really on your own? And, you know, to go out and survive in the wilderness and come back, well, now you're a man.
Yeah. So have you ever read any of the Dune novels from Frank Herbert?
No, but it's on the to read list.
You need to read them. His prose is magical. Just his method of writing and his style of writing is absolutely magical. It'll draw you in. But there's a scene in that book when the father figure of the main character, Duke Atreides, is talking to Paul Atreides, and he says, travel awakens something deep within us. Without those experiences, that sleeper can never awaken. And that's exactly what you're describing with your FOE brother who's down in South America, right? He's taking that travel, that sleeper's awakening within him. That new perspective is blooming in his mind, right? Without that, you know, he's just going to be, you know, the guy who never travels. You know, the kids that I grew up with in high school, right? They're still here. They don't have any outside perspective. They talk about how much, you know, the town sucks. You know, it's a small town in Virginia, in Appalachia, right? I mean, does it stink? Depends on your perspective. There's not a lot of shopping or, you know, large cities to go party in or go to the hip clubs, but, you know, there's some awesome trail running and, you know, all kinds of neat cultural events that are specific to our area and our roots and our heritage. So it's a matter of perspective.
For those listening, check it out. Accumulate some experiences. Don't just accumulate possessions. You know, if we're going to talk about the traveler awakening, we're going to talk about forging your own way. Go out and do things. Don't just buy more stuff. You know, if it's going to come down to $500 for a new PlayStation or whatever, or you can spend $500 on a round trip to somewhere totally random, get your Airbnb, get a hotel, then come home. Maybe it's time to start investing in trips, start broadening your horizon or expanding, you know, the depth as far as you can see. Like, hey, I've been to the West, or I've been to the South, I've been to the Midwest. You know, I went to Canada or Mexico or wherever. You know, when you can say you did those things, your perspective as well as appreciation is going to broaden in all areas of life.
Stuff ends up in a landfill. Memories end up in your family history.
Damn, man, you are dropping solid lines. Like, I got to start writing these down. All right. I want to shift to something you said before we went live. So earlier we were talking about, we were just normal dudes doing our thing, and somehow we found a spot on the internet. We found our slice of the pie. And I was explaining, you know, it, from my perspective, for men to get to the point where they can start creating or they can start having a conversation with others online, there's an initial hurdle to get over. And I wanted to hear your perspective with that initial hurdle when Nate reached out to you to write an article for his blog. For a lot of guys, to be like, oh, why should I write it? You know, why me? What do I have to say? I'm not a unique voice. Everybody's talk. It was about jujitsu. So there's 100 people speaking about jujitsu. Why should I write this piece? Once you get over that hurdle, man, the sky's the limit. But how did you get over that initial wave? Were you writing before and he hit you up? You know, how did you say, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm all in. Because that's how you and I really cross paths.
Yeah. So I used to write a lot when I was younger, just for myself. You know, I was a D&D nerd growing up in high school. You know, I wrote a lot of stories about, you know, back history for my characters. And I wrote stuff just for myself that I never published or put out on the internet. So I've always enjoyed writing. I write a lot for work. It's more technical writing, but, you know, try to bring a little bit of flair to that, you know, try to make the proposal somewhat interesting so we get the business. But I've always written, you know, in some way, shape or form. The great thing about when Steel Jans reached out to me is he made it really easy for me. He asked me to write about something that I was very interested in and pretty passionate about. You know, if he'd had reached out with a blank chit, right? Hey, you want to come write for my website? What do you want to write about? I probably would have looked at myself in the mirror for quite a while and said, dude, I'm an ordinary guy. You know, I live out here in Virginia. I do my 9-to-5, travel a little bit. There's nothing interesting about me, right? I would have, that block would have been a lot higher. Nathan really did me a solid by giving me a topic to write about that somehow, I don't know how, somehow he knew I was interested in. So that was it. That was very easy. I had been thinking about writing an article and putting it out on Twitter or Gumroad. I was going to actually reach out to some of my Twitter contacts that had done that before Nathan even wrote me. And that article turned into my second article for Nathan, which is, you know, my father was Don Draper. I wanted to write that for myself and somehow put it out there. And Nathan opened up the door when he said, hey, you want to write something else for me after we did the jujitsu piece? I think the big hurdle for normal guys is what we were talking about a little bit earlier, is most guys actually have interesting stories. They just don't understand that it's interesting to other people. Just because it's not interesting to you doesn't mean it's not interesting to other people, because they don't have your perspective, right? You know, I could write about stuff here in the South and, you know, somebody from, you know, up north, you know, they don't have that perspective, so it would be interesting to them. The trip is getting over the I'm just a normal guy. Yeah, we're all just normal guys, but we've all got a story to tell, because something's happened in our life that is either going to be interesting or help other people.
It's difficult, you know, that initial objective assessment of self, because I go through it as well. I'm like, I'm just a dad doing my thing. But it's almost like being a normal dude in today's society is no longer normal. Like, I was speaking to Goldman, and I was talking to him about, it was after the last 21 convention, and I'm looking around, it's me, him, AJ Cortez, George Bruno, I think Jack Murphy was in there, and Anthony Johnson. And I'm looking around, I'm like, you guys all have like these incredible stories. You've done all these amazing things. I'm like, why am I here? Like, I'm not sad I'm here. I'm very happy to be included in your group, but like, what the hell am I doing on the stage? And Goldman looks at me and he's like, dude, having a wife and normal children is an act of rebellion in these days. Like, not being angry or not being bitter or not being, you know, this soft like man, but actually having children who are healthy and a man who's healthy and a wife who's happy. Like, that's like a whole new fucking realm right now. And I was like, whoa, like, it hadn't even occurred to me that normal is no longer normal. And what we take for granted, others, it's like magic to them. Now, before we went live, you had said, you know, for a lot of men, opportunity looks like work. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's pretty simple. And that's a pretty hackneyed old bromide. But the thing about hackneyed old bromides is they're usually true. You know, I work a lot. I have a lot of stuff going on around the house. You know, we've got horses. They take a lot of, you know, they're not low maintenance pets. So when Nathan hit me up to do this article, and again, I don't know how the hell he found me. But when Nathan hit me up to write the article, I very easily could have looked around and gone, man, I got too much going on. You know, I'm going to write for this dude that, you know, I follow on the internet. And I'm just not going to do it. I got too much going on. That's when opportunity knocks, man, is when it's inconvenient. Opportunity comes when it's not convenient a lot of the times. So I made time. I wrote for Nathan, you know, and like I said, that one article, you know, got me, I'm writing on the blog for Ground Shark Coffee Company every month now. And I'm contributing to Barbarian Rhetoric about every month now. People need to get over this idea that opportunity is going to come to you wrapped up with a nice little bow and have a check attached to it. Opportunity, it's going to be dirty. It's going to be messy. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to lose some sleep. You're going to have to rearrange your priorities. And you might have to work at it for a while before it turns into anything. It's not going to be, like I said, it's not going to be the guy at the dinner party in the three-piece suit that hands you a check for $100,000 to go start your new business, right? It's going to be like, you know, Jeff Putnam at Rugged Legacy, right? He's doing that. You know, he's building his dream, you know, blood, sweat, and tears a little bit at a time. He just put out his new ebook, you know. It wasn't easy for him. It's not easy for anybody who builds anything, especially, you know, like you said, the normal guy who's trying to work his side hustle and, you know, live out his dream and try to make it become reality. Opportunities work. It's not something that just happens and it's given to you. You got to work for it.
It's an important reminder because guys, sometimes the default is no. Like, oh, I can't do this. I shouldn't do this. Why me? Not me. No, no, no. Negative, negative, negative. Down, down, down. We gotta shift that. You know, your default, start shifting that towards, yeah, you know, sure. You want to write this article? Okay. Hey, you want to help me climb this mountain? All right. You know, instead of always saying, well, no, my schedule's not going to align. Not everything's perfect. Look, that's just keeping yourself in a comfortable cage. But whether it's a comfortable cage or it's a prison cell, it's the same. You're stuck. You're trapped. The only way to expand that is to go out and say yes. And also, so apparently we run with the same crowd and a lot of guys are going to be very happy with us. So just for those listening, the man, Nate, we keep referencing, the one who connected Scott and I, that's Steel Jans, STEELJANZ on Twitter. Ground Shark Coffee is run by Nick Lowry. That's at Nick, LOWARY. And then the man who just released his ebook is Jeff Putnam. And the book is Set Yourself on Fire. You can find that on Gumroad. That's my plug, my commercial. No, back to the conversation. When men find themselves, you know, having to face hard things, they shirk back. I want to know, what role did jiu-jitsu play in helping you lean into things? We spoke a little bit earlier about, you know, if you can voluntarily get your ass kicked and choked out on a mat, going into a board meeting is no big deal. Has that helped you with defaulting to yes and taking on challenges?
It has. You know, the like you said, it takes a special kind of guy to go get choked out for fun, and pay for it. I think anybody who is in combat sports as a hobby or for fun, it's a special kind of mentality. But you know, one of the things that, and I wrote about this a little bit in my article for Steel Jans, you know, one of the first things that you'll learn in jiu-jitsu is that you turn into a bad position, right? If you're in a bad position, if your opponent's on top of you, you don't give them your back. You turn into your opponent. That way you've got options. If you give them your back, there's nothing you can do. You have no options. You have no tools. If you turn into the position, if you turn into the pain, then you have options. You have weapons. You have tools. It's the same thing in life. If you shirk away from a bad position, or you ignore it, or you know, you pretend it's not there, the problem's going to get bigger. And the same thing goes for work. If there's something that you don't want to do, that probably means you need to do it. If it's cold showers, if it's, you know, going on a diet that you know you're not going to enjoy, but it's going to be good for you in the long run. In work, if it's, you know, you want to go ask for a raise, well, go ask for a raise. The worst thing they can say is no. You know, jiu-jitsu just taught me to be a lot more aggressive in a controlled way, you know, because you can't be spazzy on the mats. If you're spazzy, you know, just being default aggressive, being silly, you know, or being needlessly aggressive, you're going to get in trouble. So, you know, you kind of got to think about your aggression and know how to make it work for you. But it definitely teaches you how to work in a bad position, how to keep your head, how to evaluate where you are in that bad position, and then act rationally in bad positions. And from a standpoint of taking on work or saying yes to more things, once you get into jiu-jitsu for a while and you see how much you can do, especially that progression, like the first 6 months, the amount of growth that you have in the first 6 months from where you start to where you end, you really could kick your own ass after 6 months, like easily. And just seeing that growth inside of yourself, that, man, I am so much better than I was 6 months ago, that can be a jumping off point for everywhere in your life. Because if you continue, you know, apathy is what kills most men, right? The saying is most men lead quiet lives of desperation, right? That's one of the reasons I started jiu-jitsu, because I didn't want to, you know, die that silent death that silent death. So when you see how far you can come in such a short period of time, that translates to the rest of your life. You're not afraid to start new things.
And that's such, if you could bottle that up and sell it to men, I mean, that's the elixir right there. That is the thing that so many are missing. You know, you spoke about in your article that it was a workout, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, that's a work. So physically you're getting after it, but then you've also got to develop that confidence. Well, that's mentally, you know, so you've got your physical fitness and your mental fitness being hardened and getting stronger, which leads to competence, you know, which leads to you're more skilled to defend yourself. But also outside of that, you know, there's the mantra, success begets success. You know, when you can do the one thing right, if you can just not tap out and, you know, fight a little bit further or push a little bit harder to get out of the situation. Well, if you can do that on a mat, you can do that in a relationship. You know, a man who literally got his ass kicked and then he's at the bar, you know, a single guy, and he sees a girl that's beautiful. You know, instead of being afraid to talk to her, like, oh, she's going to say no. Like, I got my ass kicked. Like, who gives a shit? Like, let's err on the side of action. Go ahead, talk to her. You know, for men who are in relationships or marriages for a long time, you know, they're, sometimes things get routine, they get stale. But those men who are doing things and constantly trying new moves, well, they'll try something new in the relationship. Hey, let's go on the surprise vacation. Hey, you know, let's try this, you know, new activity together. Instead of sitting down and watching Netflix, let's go out and do something. You know, let's err on the side of acting. And with that, have you found, and we did speak a little bit, so I know the answer, but for those listening, you know, a lot of men, they don't have other men to be men around. Have you found that having that tribe aspect of jiu-jitsu is also helped cultivate, you know, that spirit? Because we talked about the mind and body. Does being around other guys who also volunteer to get choked out by you, you know, help that spiritual side where you're like, you're connected to the tribe?
Yeah, absolutely. We, you know, my team really is a tribe, and we have a couple of ladies on the team as well. I mean, I'll tell you what, they're tough, geez. But yeah, my you know, the team that we have, they know me better. They know me better than most people, because we've, you know, we get on the mats and we lay it all out there, and you know, we compete against each other, you know, three times a week for, you know, 2.5 hours at a shot. And there's something about, you mentioned crucible earlier, there's something about that crucible about men who strive together, and they do hard things together that really draws people together and creates a bond and a brotherhood. And my teammates know me better than just about anybody else. In a physical, you know, and in a spiritual sense, because we're out there, you know, we're out there putting it on the line, you know, three times a week or more. I'd say, you know, my wife knows me the best out of anybody, but then it's my jiu-jitsu teammates, a close second, just because we're out there, you know, getting after it on a weekly basis. If anybody is looking for a tribe or a team, or, you know, they want to make those deeper connections with other guys on a totally different level, I highly recommend some kind of combat sport. Or, you know, if you can't find that, or you're not able to, or you're not interested in, some sort of physical activity that other guys do together. Because it's different than, you know, we can create our tribes online, and, you know, I love all my Twitter, you know, all my Twitter brothers and sisters out there. But it's different because you're actually interacting with them in the real world. You're doing real things, real hard things together. And the key there is hard things, right? Getting together with somebody, with your buddies at the bar and having a couple beers and watching the game, that's fun. But it's not the same thing as going on a hike together, going hunting together, doing jiu-jitsu together. It's different.
I think one of the common elements between all that is there has to be suffering. There has to be effort and a sense of suffering. And that's the glue. That's the cohesion. You know, as you're speaking of your tribe, I was thinking of the military. You know, when you're in boot camp, you all get your ass kicked together. And that's why you come together, because the only person you can talk to about what sucks or what you're going through is the dude who went through it or the chick who went through the same thing. So you can't talk to me about getting choked out. It's a great conversation we're having, but until you and I are rolling on the mats, you can't really have that bond, you know? So you with somebody else be like, hey, yeah, I did this. They're like, yeah, I totally get it because I did the same thing. You know, my shoulder hurts, mine too. You know, you have that sense of connection. Whereas I'd be like, it's interesting. This year, actually, I want to get the entire family in jiu-jitsu, but I've been traveling and I've got another 2 weeks in February where I'm gone. But when I come back from that, I'll be entering the mat with my kids for the first time in my life. So it's going to be awesome. I look forward to being able to share that experience with you.
I look forward to hearing your stories. If you're ever in Virginia, in the Central Shenandoah Valley, and you want to drop by my gym and come catch a roll, dude, you're always welcome at my gym.
That's the thing. Like that right there, like that opening, that greeting, that welcoming, it's like, hey, you're in the group. Come on in. You're in the tribe. You're in the club. Nick Lowry, huge jiu-jitsu guy, you know, he's kind of been busting my balls because I told him in December that January is going to do it. But I was like, dude, I was sick January. I'm on vacation for the next 2 weeks heading out in February. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to pay to just not show up for a month. So when I get back, he can stop riding me. To your point, though, I also think there's an element of your threshold going up of tolerance. You can handle more stress. You can handle more physical, you know, things coming your way. If somebody online says, hey man, would you like to write this article? Your threshold for what you can tolerate is so high. You're like, yeah, I can do all my normal 9-to-5 work and write this article because I'm a dude who does things. You know, that comes from suffering. So I think there is something to be said for productive suffering when it comes to raising your threshold as to what you can handle, as well as your cohesion to your tribe.
I would agree that we don't get stronger by not embracing struggle. I mean, you see that in the weight room, you see that in work, in education. Growth does not come through being lackadaisical or lazy. The only way we grow is by stressing our system, right? in the weight room, you try to lift more weights, you know, you lift as much as you can. That damages the muscle, and in reaction, your body builds more muscle so you can lift more weights. You know, in school, we go to school, we study hard, we, you know, basically make our brain hurt a lot, and we absorb more information. We don't just lay the book on top of our head and hope osmosis does it. You have to actually struggle to learn the information. Same thing in work, right? I mean, we work our, you know, you quit your 9-to-5, which, you know, good on you. But that doesn't mean you're not struggling, right? You're not working hard. You're working harder than a lot of guys working a normal 9-to-5, just trying to keep the family alpha and FOE, you know, moving forward. Growth comes in the hard times, not in the easy times. And the more hard times you have, the better the easy times are going to be.
It's funny you bring that up. So I almost tweeted this, but I thought it would come across as arrogant or like a humble brag. But I was going to say, you know, I don't worry about Mondays because I'm working 7 days a week. Like, when you are working for yourself, like yesterday during the Super Bowl, I'm checking websites, I'm, you know, writing an email, I'm doing these things. I'm like, man, like there's no real off. But when you find joy in the struggle, like you enjoy the work, it's not work. You know, and I know it's cliche to say, if you love what you do, you won't work a day in your life. You know, there is that cliche to it, but it's real. Like, and it's like, man, like I get it. Like, sometimes it sucks waking up early to write, staying up late to write. You know, you don't have a weekend, but you're your boss. There's an element of that. You're like, fuck it. Like, I love what I do, and I would do this whether getting paid or not. It's just fantastic that I found a way to get paid.
If you've got your mission in life, everything else just kind of settles into place. I mean, and whether that, you know, whether that mission's your job, or, you know, maybe you have to have a job so that it can fund your mission, right? We shouldn't confuse the two, right? Your mission doesn't necessarily have to be your job, but as long as you've got a mission and everything around your life is centered on moving that mission forward, life's a lot easier.
I'd say having a mission is conducive to an optimal life. And like you said, you can have your 9-to-5. And if you leave your 9-to-5, you get the kids, you do your jujitsu, you guys come home, you have fun, you go on adventures. I mean, that's a life well lived. It's not about not having a job or having a job. It's not about, you know, the amount of free time or the amount of money you make. It's about how you're living the life you have. As long as it's in accordance with what you want to do. I mean, that to me, you can go to your deathbed without regret. You did what you wanted to do. You followed your mission.
Yep. And that's, you know, we'll kind of circle back around to social media, you know, what we were talking about earlier about using social media to either make your real life better or to try to manipulate your real life so that your social media looks better. You know, if we stop comparing ourselves to other people's, you know, what'd you call it, highlight reel? Yep. Stop comparing yourself to other people's highlight reel and go out and do things. And, you know, so you weren't at you weren't on the beach at Bali with the supermodel. Okay, fine. But you were at the beach in North Carolina with your wife and two kids. That's a more real story and a more fulfilling memory than trying to keep up with the Kardashians.
You know, that's our modern day keeping up with the Joneses. We're keeping up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, right.
You're an excellent guest. you're tying, you know, what we said now to what we said in the beginning. You know, we got the keeping up with the Kardashians. Man, I'm confident not the last podcast you're going to be on after this. This is fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you.
There is something I wanted to dive into to sort of start wrapping this one up as well. And you wrote an article, Ode to the Mountains. And I believe this was for Ground Shark.
Yes. Now,
Nick brought me during our first Fraternity of Excellence live meetup. We climbed, he's going to kill me, a Grays and Tories. I almost forgot it. I've got a picture of the mountains right there too. We hit the peaks of Grays and Tories. So for somebody like me coming from sea level all the way up to Colorado, and then like the next day going to 14,000 foot plus elevation for two peaks, it was wild. But he got me there, and dude, on the summit, I got it. Like, I understood why the mountains call to people. I understand why Nick does what he does. Because when you're up there, you're like, man, holy shit. You can see it. You're like on top of the world, literally. You can see everywhere, and it's incredible. And the only way to experience that was the grit, was the grind to get up the damn hill, you know, and to make it and to earn the view. As I was reading your piece on Ode to the Mountains, do you think that the appreciation for outdoors was instilled in you at a young age by your parents? And, or do you think that's something that's just natural to men or maybe human beings, you know, women as well?
I think the answer to that's yes. I spent a lot of time outdoors as a kid, you know, lived in a small, like I said, the area where I live or where I grew up is rural agricultural. So spent a lot of time on the, you know, on the seat of a 10-speed bike when I was a kid, riding around, you know, running through cornfields, doing stuff that boys do, you know, playing war and, you know, doing that kind of thing. And then, you know, when we traveled with my grandparents, there was a lot of outdoor stuff, right? There was, you know, going to the top of Pikes Peak and seeing the Tetons and, you know, experiencing Yellowstone and hiking around Yellowstone and seeing all the nature out there. So, you know, that travel, exposed me to a lot of different outdoor, activities, as a kid. And then as I got older and I got introduced to rock climbing by a friend of mine, who I actually studied a different form of martial arts with in high school, he introduced me to rock climbing, and started doing the way you usually do, right? You start gym climbing, indoors. And then he and I started rock climbing outdoors, actual rock pitches. So I think there's a calling to the outdoors that is particular to men. And I think the more that men ignore it, it's to their detriment. There's a reason that human beings have vitamin D receptors that are activated by sunlight. We're supposed to be outside. We're supposed to be in the sun. We're supposed to get fresh air, right? And I don't care what kind of fancy light bulb you buy. It's not going to be the same as getting outside in the sun and the fresh air.
I tell my kids we're solar powered.
Exactly.
Like, you need energy. Go outside.
I mean, really, we are, right? I mean, you threw something up on Twitter last night about you got a big dose of vitamin D and you feel great, right? So I think men are called the outdoors. We need to spend more time in the outdoors. I'm blessed that I got to grow up in this area where there are a lot of outdoors and, you know, it's not grown up in urban sprawl and, you know, I get fresh air and I can see the stars at night. There are a lot of folks that, you know, if you grew up in, you know, Portsmouth or, you know, Norfolk, you can't even see the stars at night. Right. So I'm blessed to be in this area where I have ready access to the outdoors. I believe men need to spend time in the outdoors.
Absolutely. And I think you knew exactly where I was going with this because that's, you know, hammer hitting the nail on the head. You know, when I speak to men right now, I went from my house, which was climate controlled. I walked outside for about 10 steps and then I went to my shed. This was climate controlled. I turned the heater off, so it wasn't loud while we were speaking, but for the most part, I'm sheltered. You know, it's not too cold. It's not too hot. Always comfortable. But what I do is I make it a point to get outside. Whether I'm running around with the kids, walking the dogs, whatever, you know, I make it a point to expose myself to the elements. And I think a lot of men, that level of discomfort, that's kind of opening the door to raising that threshold that we were talking about. Doing something as simple as, hey, break your routine of being in your climate-controlled house, then you go to your climate-controlled car, which brings you to your climate-controlled office, and then reverse. And that's your day, and that's your week, and that's your year. You know, it's like, wow, like at no point did you go for a hike. At no point do you know what it feels like to have the wind blowing your face and it just doesn't stop. And it's like permeating all of your clothes and you're just like, whatever, you know, this is how it is. Or it starts to drizzle and you don't run inside. You're like, okay, whatever. It's raining, you know, throw your hood on. A lot of men, they're so far removed from that I think it plays into the fact that we're so far removed from a threat of anything that men start to get soft. We were hard because we had to fight the freaking animal that might show up or the other tribe that might show up. You know, we're so far from that, well, why do we need to learn how to fight? Why do we need to expose ourselves to the elements? Because that's what makes a man, because that's what we're designed to do. That's what our mind and body are meant to do. So when you take that away, it's no wonder that people are suffering from anxiety and depression. Like, you have no purpose. You've never exposed yourself to the elements to make yourself feel anything. So apathetic living is just a death sentence, you know, before you enter the ground.
It's, you know, it's like we're living like hamsters, you know, in the the habit trail cage, right, where you got the little tube and the hamster runs. He gets on the wheel and he runs the little wheel and he runs through the little tube and he gets his food pellet and he runs through another tube and he goes to his little spot where he gets where he sleeps, and then he runs through another tube and he gets his water and he spends his life in that tube, right? And we really have the opportunity to live our life in a tube. It, exactly what you described, right? Going from climate controlled house to climate controlled car to climate controlled office, climate controlled gym, right? Then back to the climate controlled house where we get our food pellets out of the refrigerator, and we drink our shitty water and rinse and repeat every freaking morning. It's, if you're not careful, you'll turn into a bipedal hamster.
That is incredible. That in itself could be something you could write about. If you're not going to write about it, I'm stealing that, and that's my next email. That's going on the email list. Don't live like a hamster.
my next article for Nathan is actually, and I need to wrap it up and get it sent to him. I've had some stuff come up this month that I've had to take care of, but my next article for Nathan is going to be how to use business travel as a laboratory for personal development. And the gist there is, you can be the businessman who sits down at the hotel bar and, has a couple too many drinks and indulges in the vices that, you don't want your wife to know about while you're on the road, and maybe get a little handsy with the waitress at the restaurant. Or you can use that time alone to experiment and, try to find new ways to better yourself and try things out in your life in this isolated environment that you have as a business traveler. That's kind of different than, how most people live their life. Business travel presents its own challenges. But how to use that time constructively, to figure out ways to better yourself without disrupting your normal everyday routine.
It's interesting you bring that up. So tomorrow I fly out to Florida, and it's a day before all the FOE men fly out. So they're flying down Wednesday. So my wife was like, well, what are you going to do? You've got a day to really do nothing. I was like, yeah, I'm going to explore. I'll probably clear out my emails and then just go explore the area. It's interesting that alone time, I'm just going to go walk around, go see things, not worry about the wife, not worry about the kids. I'm in an environment where it's just me, which is a rare thing. So I can go and do whatever I want. And to even think about sitting at a bar and just getting drunk, what a waste. I've got hours and hours where I can go do whatever I want. I can find a museum. I can sit on my laptop and just write for a whole day outside if I want to, to waste that opportunity. I mean, but as you said, there's a reason that you're bringing it up. Many men do.
Yeah. One of the best business trips I ever had was, I went out to California, I went out to Irvine, and I punched out, like you said, I punched out a day earlier than some of my teammates were coming the next day. And I got there and, 3 hours time difference, my internal clock was all jacked up. So I just got out and walked around the area near the hotel, and it was a business area where, it was, offices on the top level, and the bottom level, the bottom floor of all the buildings were restaurants and stores and stuff. And it was probably about five buildings in this little walkable cluster that had a pond in the middle. And anyway, so I walked that entire area before my teammates came in, and they were like, oh man, what are we going to do? I'm like, dude, there's this Thai place over here. There's an Italian place down there. There's this really cool, street art museum over here. And they're like, dude, what did you do while we were coming in?
I'm like, all the things,
everything. I'm like, I got this place on lock. And that was one of the best business trips I ever took, because all I did was walk around that area and find stuff and get out of your hotel room, man. And even if you don't have that opportunity, just don't be the guy at the bar. You want to try a new diet? What's a better way than to, do, and I'm kind of giving away part of my article here. Sorry, Nathan, but, you want to try a fast. There's no better way to fast than when you're on travel, right? Airport food sucks and is expensive. So you want to try a 24-hour fast? Do it while you're traveling. You want to try yoga, but you don't want to look stupid? Do it in your hotel room. There's this opportunity of being alone that gives us an opportunity to experiment with things that we might feel inhibited to try in our normal everyday life. Well, you're not in your normal everyday life.
I completely agree. And it's opportunities like that that men really need to wake up and see that are presenting themselves. Like, hey, step back for a moment, analyze the opportunity you have, take advantage, implement something new. Scott, this has been an awesome conversation.
It has. Thank you. I've really enjoyed this.
For those who are looking to pick your brain, maybe get to know more about you or find your writings, where can they find you?
So on Twitter and Instagram, my handle's the same. It's at Gilead Bays, and that's the name of my 5-acre compound that we that I live at with my wife and our horses. So on IG and Twitter, it's at Gilead Bays. You can find links to all my articles in my bio. And I'm, like I said, I'm currently writing for Ground Shark Coffee, for Nick Lowry, and for Nate at Barbarian Rhetoric. And hit me up if you guys have any questions or you know, you want to connect. I'm always looking for, you know, new quality individuals to connect with and trade ideas. And, you know, my, I'm really happy with my Twitter gang. Got a lot of high quality people on there, you know, such as yourself and all the other teammates that we all run in the same circles. And I'm always looking for new, interesting people that, you know, I can pick their brain and they want to pick mine. So, you know, throw me a connect request and be happy to follow you back.
Yes, sir. Teamwork makes the dream work.
Absolutely.
For everybody who tuned in, I will have links to all of Scott's content as well as social media accounts below. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, I'll catch you later.